The following is a presentation of Foosball Radio.
If it's too loud, you're too old.
We cannot believe it. We just went, oh!
I was a good bar player.
Okay.
I was very vocal.
Very vocal.
I wanted to win.
This is Todd Lafredo. You're listening to Foosball Radio.
It's Foos Talk Live.
Are you talking to me?
Compelling and lively banter.
Are you going to talk to us?
Talking foosball.
Foosball was how I measured my value as a man. You took that away.
Players and fans, promoters and pros. Unedited and raw.
Talk, talk, talk.
Living in the moment.
We have a lot of important things to talk about.
All while practicing social distancing.
Cool. We'll talk. No big whoop.
Let's get this thing started. Foos Talk Live. Coming to you live from the Foosball Radio Studios, it's the 126th episode of Foos Talk Live, with thanks and promotional consideration extended to InsideFoos.com, providing access to some of the most exciting matches ever recorded, plus live tournaments, pro and post-show analysis, and interviews. Our thanks to ProtectoFlex, the world's premier foosball safety accessory. Go to Protecto-Flex.com. Thanks to RodLock. Practice more, reach less. The best practice tool in foosball. Visit rod-lock.com. Brought to you by 518 Prints, one of the best printers of promotional items in foosball apparel. Visit 518prints.com. We also support the USTSO, helping to usher in a new era of competitive foosball. Become a member at usafoosball.com. Plus, Foosball Clubs USA, promoting foosball through school systems all over the United States. Visit foosballclubsusa.com and make a donation today. Well, welcome to episode 126 of Foos Talk Live. I'm Tom Robinson. Thank you so much to our brand new Patreon pillars for supporting us and joining us in the Foos Talk Live Foosball Radio Patreon room tonight. They're on the show listening live. We have Judy Schober and we also have Rob Cutler listening. And we do want to thank everybody who's jumped in to help out with the Patreon. We have folks like James Sparky Castillo, Mike Green, Dwayne Stewart, Judy, of course, Jamie Kunst, David Kala, Tommy Atkinson, and of course, Rob, all of Foosball Radio Patreons, and we greatly appreciate your help. If you haven't done so already, visit our website at patreon.com/foosballradio. And thanks again. Now, conversation about the beautiful sport of foosball is always a whole lot more interesting when you can chat with the greatest play-by-play foosball announcer of all time, Jim Stevens. Hello, Jim.
Oh, that's me. Hey, Tom. Good to hear your voice after a couple of weeks. And I guess this is really it's been about 3 weeks since we did a show from the studio, so to speak. But 2 weeks ago, we had a chance to be in Lexington, Kentucky together, along with Adam and Clay and everyone else. And what a great event it was. Kind of the first time we've had a chance to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was an event that saw incredible runs from a couple of Hall of Fame oldsters, maybe the two greatest American players of all time.
The memories.
The most international tornado worlds of all time, certainly. Yes. We're going to prove that tonight as we go over some of the results and performances. And it was just great for all of us to be together in the same place at the same time. Now, if anyone has heard the Foos Talk Live from 2 weeks ago, it was a little different than many of what we do. I listen with discretion. Listen at your own risk.
Please.
I suggest that most of you listen, but maybe it's not for everyone.
Well, no, not necessarily. Maybe once the mixed company has gone away and you feel it's okay, then yeah, that might be a good time. It is marked clearly explicit content, but you know something?
For sure. What was interesting about it was the first time that all four of us had actually sat in the same room. We each had our own microphone sitting around a table.
Yes.
Together in the same place at the same time. And there was a certain energy to that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There were other certainly contributing factors. Actors as well, it being 3 a.m. in the morning, late Sunday night, early Monday morning. But it was a lot of fun, and I can't wait to talk about that event. And, of course, Adam and Clay are up in Portland this weekend.
Yeah.
We've got an exciting event going up on up in Montreal on Bonzini. And then coming up here in, I guess, eight weeks, the final major championship of the season here in the great state of Colorado, the Colorado State Championships, which should be a lot of fun as well.
And now, there's always this question I get from people sometimes. They want to know, okay, if I'm going to go to a tournament this year, what tournament should I go to? And, you know, if you're going to name, let's say, the top three, Colorado is definitely one of those. No question.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And of course, we talk about Texas State. You know, Colorado is an amazing tournament. If you've never been, please come. The venue is sensational. The way they run the event is awesome. Great energy, players from all over the country, et cetera. Of course, Vegas and Worlds would be maybe the other two on that short list.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, as we kind of wind down the season, heading to Denver, landing at Denver International Airport, going about 12 miles west to Thornton. The DoubleTree Hotel certainly should be on your bucket list of tournaments to attend. Yeah. This year and into the future as well.
And the Mile High City, of course, you know, there's always that risk. Like I ran one of the first time I went to Denver, getting altitude sickness. But you know, it's less likely because you're probably going to be so busy playing foosball.
Well, maybe, but certainly every year there seems to be a few people who maybe don't drink as much water or electrolytes as they should. You must drink twice as much water as you would at home when you come to a mile higher above. I live at about 7,000 feet here in the southwest corner of Colorado in Durango.
Yeah.
And we know our kids, our whole family drink the water, drink a lot of water, keep it coming, get plenty of sleep, and you won't be affected by it. You'll adjust pretty quickly, but you got to drink that water, Tom.
Well,
I tried to tell you.
Jim, I have an even better idea. I think we should...
what Jim and I like to do right about this time is to reveal our favorite IPA.
IPA is a much better substitute for H2O, don't you think?
Well, you got to have a little of both. If you're going to drink IPAs, you got to also supplement that with drinking some water, Tom.
Oh.
And maybe that was a part of the problem the first time when you came here. But
it could have been.
Again, living in the Centennial State, I have learned. You know, as someone who basically was a flatlander coming from Los Angeles and now living up, more than a mile high, I learned, yes, I'm going to drink IPAs. I enjoy IPAs, but you got to drink a little water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tom, there's a brewery in Decorah, Iowa, of all places, right? When you think IPAs, you think Pacific Northwest, you think Southern California, you think West Coast, you think New England.
Yep.
You don't think of Decorah, Iowa.
No, you don't.
But there's a brewery there called Toppling Goliath Brewery in Decorah, Iowa. It's outstanding. It's a great brewery. This is three or four different beers I've had from Toppling Goliath Brewery. This one is the Radiant Haze.
Radiant.
It's an IPA, of course. It's a hazy IPA with Amarillo, Citra, Mosaic, and Sabro hops. It says here on the can itself, it says, open your third eye and follow this hazy IPA on a tropical trip with notes of orange and mango.
Ooh.
I'm going to go ahead and, of course, you know I'm pouring it into a real IPA glass.
Yes.
And taking a sip. Oh, yeah. Yeah, these people, surprisingly, this is one of the best breweries in America, Toppling Goliath Brewery in Decorah, Iowa.
So,
what are you drinking?
So, the third eye, huh? And what was that adjective you used to describe it? Brilliant?
I don't remember which adjective. But it's great. It's great. It's a tropical trip, it says, with notes of orange
trip.
And mango.
Man,
just little notes of it, you know, citric notes.
So creative, this IPA thing, you know?
Well, it's the best, yes.
This week, I went to my usual source, the old Saratoga Mercantile. They always have something great waiting for me.
Love that place.
This week, they had Not Good Behavior, double IPA.
Okay.
Now, this is a collaboration with Widowmaker Brewing of Braintree, Massachusetts, and Thin Man Brewery of Buffalo, New York. They collaborated.
Wait a minute. Did you say Thin Man Brewery?
Thin Man Brewery. Like in the...
Interesting.
Yeah, the tall, thin man. Buffalo, of course, they're well known for their Thin Man Brewery. It's an 8.2 alcohol by volume.
Look out, folks.
Hazy with Citra, Galaxy, and Mosaic Double Dry Hot. And I read one of the reviews. One of the guys who was talking about it online said, it tastes like pastry. Let's find out.
Let's find out. Yeah. And while you're tasting, I'm going to kind of give you an interesting a little insight, a little coincidence. When I first started playing foosball way back when, everybody had a nickname, right? Everybody had a nickname when you'd sign up for the local DYP or when you'd go to that tournament soccer tournament. You had a nickname. My nickname, by the way, was The Thin Man.
It was. Oh, so this is for you, the Thin Man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I was about 6'3" and about 133 pounds.
Obvious reasons. Wet. Yes. Okay. Well, cheers to the Thin Man. This is excellent, by the way. This is really, really nice.
It has to be. Yeah.
It does taste a little like pastry. No question about it.
Mm-mm-mm.
What a fizz. Oh, and I have to say, I would highly recommend this one. Of course,
you got to pour it into a snifter, though, Tom.
Oh, yeah,
that's a double IPA at better than 8%. It must be drank from a snifter.
Oh, yeah. And it is. Of course, it's in one of my special glasses here tonight.
Oh, perfect.
I can see like this haze, but it's a beautiful golden color. Really nice. Wow. Okay.
Well, you are a full-fledged member of the IPA club now, buddy. You have come all the way. You are there. You've arrived. You will never drink anything else. Welcome to the club.
Well, thank you. I mean, it is something once you finally get into the world of this. I mean, it just is never ending. It's something different every week. And
that is so true.
I found somebody online, a couple guys online that have a regular, like a podcast about IPAs, and they do what we do mm-hmm. every week, but just talk about IPAs. That's all they do.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, of course, yeah, and I'm sure it's fascinating and interesting. And my uncle is kind of that kind of guy. He's been drinking IPAs for more than 20 years. In fact, I had my first IPA probably 25 years ago.
Oh, okay.
In Southern California, and when I first tasted it, and I've told this story before, I thought it was awful.
Yeah,
you know, as many people do. I tasted it, went, whoa! But it's beer. I'm going to drink it.
It's bitey.
But then at some point, it just clicked, as I know it has for you, and the rest is history.
And you know it when you find it. Like there's like everything else. There's degrees of. You know, there's decent ones, there's okay ones, there's some that are just not good. But then you've got these others, like this one tonight, this good behavior is just, wow, this is really transcendent.
Yeah, awesome.
No wonder they charge an extra dollar for this one.
Worth every penny.
Totally worth every penny.
And these days, yeah, if you're going to get a good IPA, if you go, you know, to your local establishment, like I know you do, and you get like the tall cans, which is what they really, you know, that's when the good stuff, when you know it's the good stuff, they're in those tall pint cans.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes it's $18 or $20 for a 4-pack.
Oh, yeah.
At your local liquor store. But when you pay that price in that tall can, you know you're getting something good.
Oh, it's almost not always a guarantee, but usually it is. And what I like, of course, is the idea you can mix and match. So they have these little plastic carriers, so you can go into the cooler and select one from each 6-pack, or you know just combine the different types. And yeah, I mean, then take it out to the counter and they charge you the $18 or whatever it is for 4 cans, and away you go.
Away you go is right, and you're going to go away tonight, I think, with an 8-point-something. Got to keep the stuff cold. IPA should be kept cold forever. Never should be allowed to sit at room temperature. And unfortunately, there are some of the big box stores that have the IPA sitting outside the refrigerator.
I know
this is our most popular segment on the show, but I think we need to move on.
That's why we keep doing it, and that's why our Patreons are jumping on board, I'm sure. Now,
keep the cards and letters coming.
By the way, when we were in Kentucky, we did, of course, go to the beer cave next door.
It was
nice and cold in there. And I found a real nice IPA. I don't know if we talked about it on the air, called a Zombie, which I really enjoyed. But while drinking that, watching some unbelievable foosball. So many things happened, and just wanted to preface this because this particular week's Foos Talk Live flashback takes us to one of those moments. So here we go.
With great moments in foosball history, this is a Foos Talk Live flashback.
Another chance to win it here. Brandon brings it across, was looking at the pull kick. Tried to go with the dink. Munoz again. Brandon fakes, then trying to dink it. Stolen away, the quick pull kick blocked away. Alfredo putting it into play, brushes it through the lane. Todd Scotty just looking to score one here. Alfredo has that straight attempt blocked. All right, let's see your snake shot here. Hit, there it is! Brandon Munoz and Kevin Romero are the 2022 Tornado World Open Doubles champions as they defeat Todd Loffredo and Scotty Weidman in 4 games to become the first ever international team to win this prestigious title.
Listen in next time for another great moment in foosball history. It's Foos Talk Live.
Yeah, there you have it. Wow, the end of that match, is some might think it of it as being anticlimactic because it was a 5-1 win for that last game. But prior to that, it was just battle. I mean, ball for ball, battle after battle. And really, there was no time during the match that I really say to myself, oh, these guys have it, or these guys, or, you know, Todd and Scotty, they've got it, or Brandon and Kevin, they've got it. There was never a moment until that very last game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that's, you know, a lot of that's because, and of course, you've got such a contrast in styles here. You've got the Costa Ricans playing an up-tempo style, super talents on, you know, both of them. You got the veteran Scotty Weidman with the great, smooth Colorado 5-row. You got Lofredo, who is the best we've ever seen at making adjustments. And that's kind of what happened during that match. You know, the Costa Ricans would strike first, and then Lofredo would make adjustments. Weidman, of course, working the 5, and it would go back and forth. But when it came down to it, I think it was just too much talent. You know, you had a guy in Brandon Munoz who was feeling so confident. You know, throughout the event, Kevin and Brandon had sort of been switching back and forth, whoever was hot or whatever. But it got down to the last couple of matches, and it was Brandon up there at forward. It was Kevin at goal, and of course, Kevin has a great shooting 2-row, very good goalie.
Yep.
But it was Brandon, obviously, and he also ended up winning open singles as well against Tony, which was an amazing performance to come and do that against the greatest singles player of all time.
Yeah.
But it's about adjustments, and that's what we saw. It was a great open doubles competition. I have not watched or listened to any of it, but I was right in the middle of it, right? Yeah. I'm sitting there commentating all these great matches, getting to watch, you know, Todd Lofredo, the greatest American player of all time, a guy that just doesn't want to go away, a guy whose first world championship came 45 years ago.
45.
And he was in the finals with a chance of winning another one 45 years later. There's never been anything like that in any other sport, Scotty Weidman as well. And it was just amazing to watch those guys. You had Terry Rue and Robert Mares, who the 2015 world champions, who were making a run looking very much like that year.
Yeah.
As I sat there and commentated their matches, I was thinking, is it going to be like that again? Robbie's 5 is unstoppable. His 3 is unstoppable. Terry Rue, such a good goalie back there. But they ran into the kids at one point, and that was it for them.
Yeah.
The defending champions, Blake Robertson, Ryan Moore, never really a factor in this one. Ryan Moore, after tripling last year, not really a factor this year in any event. And of course, you know, Ryan needs to be motivated, and he isn't always, and in this case wasn't, apparently.
He held back quite a bit. I mean, it just didn't seem like the usual spark for Ryan Moore. Although I guess he was probably, focusing on his trading cards, which just came out. But I don't know. It just seemed like, what was he out in the first bracket in open doubles?
In open singles, he lost first round, which was, immediately we talked about, is he going to go back to back triples? And then very first match he played, that was out the window. Mm-hmm. But, it's not easy. It's not easy to go back to back. It's not easy to be able to double, not easy to bring it every single tournament. You know, we get used to Tony Spreitemann doing that, playing every ball, but it's hard to do. Another great performance we saw was Mario Iannuzzi and Sean Lee out of Canada. Mm-hmm. Third place finish in open doubles. They were so consistent the way that, and that's their approach to the game. Play every ball the same way. They're not going to be super. They're not going to be bad. They're just going to be very good ball after ball after ball. And that's kind of what allowed them to get to that third place position, which is an outstanding finish. Billy Pappas was there. He was in the house and with a fifth place finish with Paul Smith. Dewey Culpepper had a great weekend, and he had Marcus Hayman finishing fifth. So some interesting results. And again, this event in particular, always features such great competition. If you're Ryan Moore and Blake Robertson, you can't mess around. You can't take balls. You can't take games off. Competition's just too tough.
No, there was, I got to say, first of all, I got to thank you for allowing me into the booth just to hang out with you and Adam at one point. I got a chance to commentate for Sam DeJean and his partner, Mark. And of course, he was playing, Brandon and Kevin. And I have to say, as we watched that unfold, I was thinking to myself, wow, what if What if Sam were to put these guys into the losers bracket? Wouldn't that be something? But it wasn't to be. But nonetheless, I have to say how proud we are here in the 518 of Sam at the age of 14, getting to seventh place in open doubles.
Ninth place. In open doubles. Ninth with Mark Krause, which is outstanding. And again, I think that's a big step forward for Sam. We're all kind of watching his career closely. We've been, you know, watching him since he was about 7 years old as he's sort of climbed the ladder. And he is an impressive player. Boy, is he a good player. Right. And just getting better, continuing to get better. You know, he's at a point now where he's battling the big guys, right? He's battling players who are more experienced, have more, you know, have had more success. So we're going to see how he does here. But his talent is so good. He has such a great approach to the game. I expect great things from the pride of New York, Sam DeJong.
Can't wait. You know, it's like, hurry up and get there already. But no, it's great to see the progress and watch him do what he does and just fulfill this prophecy, really, in a way that we all knew early on when he was 7, 8 years old that he was going to be big. So
The youngsters, of course, Jacob Balkos, the McGregor brothers, Trey Callahan, the Pulowski kids,
which are so
fun to watch. They're so good. Of course, their father, Stan, one of the great disabled players in the world. And of course, Sam DeJong. It was just a pleasure to watch these. The game is in good hands moving forward.
Oh, no doubt.
With these young players. But the old people, how about Todd Lafredo reaching the finals of open doubles?
I know.
At the age of 62. Oh. How about Cindy Head reaching the finals of women's doubles, right? She's in her 60s as well, the most decorated player in the history of American table soccer, as we saw in the movie Foosballers. But it was awesome to see both Lafredo and Head, the greatest lady player, the greatest male player in the history of American table soccer, really have great events. And it was just a pleasure to watch.
Now, on the ladies' side, we also have to mention Noelia Arcos, who's really something else.
Noelia Arcos out of the nation of Peru in South America. You know, I was thinking about it. I've thought about it. And, you know, and again, you know, while people do look at me and say, well, there's Jim Stevens and he knows a lot about foosball, still, I'm not sure I can look back and ever remember a lady player winning the amateur singles championship, an event that has 150 players in it or whatever. Yep. And Noelia, who is such an outstanding player, plays hard every ball, so talented, really wants to be great, was able to win that event against, you know, 149 guys.
That was a deep field.
And again, you know, Noelia from Peru, it was the most international, I mentioned this in the open, the most international world championship I've ever been a part of. And I think probably the most international here in America ever, Tornado World Championship for sure. Mm-hmm. When you have Brandon Munoz and Kevin Romero, when you have Brandon Munoz winning open singles, when you have Robert Atha finishing third in open singles, when you have Noelia winning amateur singles, a couple of Costa Ricans won expert doubles as well, Joel Munoz and Rodolfo Calvo, a gentleman from Bahrain on the Persian Gulf in the Middle East, Abdullah Al-Zayani, won expert singles and really played well. So the most international Tornado championships ever, and I think that's a great thing.
Oh yeah, and this is just the beginning. I think that now that we've seen the barrier broken, so to speak, because this has never happened before, correct?
No, it never has. There's never been an international player besides Frederic Collignon, the greatest player of all time, to win a championship at the Tornado Worlds, Tornado Championships, and so to have Brandon Munoz double, and I don't think we can understate. I don't think we can overstate this performance by Brandon Munoz, who now has elevated himself into the conversation as the best player in the world, certainly on Tornado.
Yep.
And when you're the best player on Tornado, you are one of the best players in the world, if not the best. And so for him to do this, this is historic. As we look back, you know, one thing about this event, Tom, you know, you might have heard me do this, where I can literally go back 40 years and tell you everyone who won doubles and singles at the American World Championship and the Tornado World Championship since 1986.
Wow.
I can tell you every one of them because that's how important this event is. That's how big this particular event is.
Yes.
So for him to double, for Brandon Munoz to do what he has done, will be talked about for decades, forever. You know, as we look back on other people, John Smith doubling in 1981, Steve Murray tripling in 1987, you know, these sorts of things, Frederic Collignon tripling five different times, And to have guys that have doubled over the years. Terry Moore doubled in 1992. You know, these are legendary performances, and certainly what Brandon Munoz accomplished in Lexington a couple of weeks ago goes into the record books as quote-unquote legendary.
When was the last time the crowd actually sang when at the end of a match like that?
Yeah. Not in the United States, certainly in Europe, but we've seen that for sure. It's that soccer kind of mentality where they're singing to their players. But the crowd in open doubles final, the crowd was into every ball, cheering every ball. It's just what, you know, we've talked about with Mark Torres here. Yes. On the air. How do you get a crowd involved? You don't hold up signs. You don't stand there and then tell them to applaud. It has to be organic. Oh, it has to be because of what's happening on the table, right? Yeah. And so for that match in particular, the way it was played, how exciting it was United States versus Costa Rica, all of that, the crowd was into it on every ball.
Oh, big time. And funny you should mention the name Mark Torres. It just seems like when you say his name, he just pops up.
I know, it's weird how that happens, man. I know.
I miss you guys. Holy crap.
We miss you.
I don't know how much you miss some guys until you hear them talking foosball, and I'm itching to jump in because, man, oh yeah. So listen, I was texting. I wasn't following. I was totally busy. I've been totally slammed, you guys, not having like really disengaged. But I thought open singles was over. So I'm texting with Tommy Atkinson at 7:30 a.m. on Monday morning. I'm like, Tommy, who won? He's like, it's not over yet. I'm like, what? He shows me where the brackets are. And Tommy, I put this text, I screenshot it and put it on Inside Food. So 7:30 a.m. on Monday, Tommy's like, Tony's going to win this. Ryan has a shot if he comes out. And, you know, I'm being very cordial. And, of course, Tommy was one of the few people to double. He did it in 93. Yep. And so I'm like, Tommy, I got to tell you what I think is going to happen. I think Brandon's going to win the winner's bracket. Tony's going to win the first set and lose the second set. And it was like 29 years to the era when Tommy doubled. Of course, Federico. We have to discount Federico. He's like an anomaly.
He doesn't count. Right? You're right. Yep.
Yeah. But I'm like, Tommy. And so when Brandon did that, a couple of huge things for me. Brandon, one thing about Brandon that we've talked about over the past 2 years is his fearlessness. Like he's attacking.
Yes.
And some people manage that fear in so many different ways. And the way Brandon does it is Brandon just says, he shot that pull kick. I finally did watch like some of it. Mm-hmm. And he shot like a reverse pull kick on some clutch point versus Tony. And Tony had to nod his head like, because that's the last thing that Tony was anyone, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? He shot like a reverse pull kick.
Yes.
On like 3-3, like fourth game. And no one would, that's the kind of thing right there, man. That kind of thing, 99% of your masters would never do that in that situation. Now, Tony might do it, and Ryan Moore might do it, but Billy probably wouldn't do it. These guys won't. You got to have like serious cojones to say, I'm going to shoot a reverse pull kick, make or break. This is what I'm going to do. He scores it. If you look at Tony nods his head in affirmation that, yeah, that was a blowout. Man, that's an arrival moment to get to that point with that possession.
There were a few other points there, too, when it came to give Brandon credit there. He actually hit several middles on Tony in a row.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, so.
That was surprising.
Well, the feeling was, go ahead. I'm sorry, John.
No, I'm just going to say it was very surprising because you thought, well, okay, Tony is the master of adjustment, and you know, get one or two on him, that's all you're going to get. But he gets several middles.
Yeah, sometimes the stars line up, and you just know it's like this is this guy's time, this is this guy's moment, and you just it's like a freight train. There was no stopping Brandon. What a massive, massive, significant victory!
Incredible. Yeah,
I think the other thing though that's a narrative for me that I want to throw out there for further conversation. So for Lofredo and Scotty to take second in open doubles at the world, and it's not being talked about enough, but it's a weird. I'm going to tell you where I'm going with this, right? So for them, it's a testament. Make no mistake. I posted a picture of Wilt Chamberlain, 300 pounds, 7'1", with a 38 inch vertical. And I'm like, these physical specimens are rare and anomalous and come around generationally. And Lofredo is absolutely that for foosball. However, I got to add another side of that. That's great for a conversation piece, right? I had a foozer say to me, here's the thing about Todd. I played against Todd. He was not even in the top 10 on TS. So these guys go back to their, like, look, this person makes the claim that, yes, I won't argue with you. Todd is a physical specimen, and Cindy Head are physical specimens. These are amazing generational players. Is it fair to also discuss if these players had stuck around? Not that any of them would be as successful as Todd in their 60s, but is it also a commentary on how far the sport hasn't moved forward? And the kids are arguing right now. You hear that?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
I
hear you, Mark. And certainly that would be, you know, if those guys had continued. Now, let's not diminish Lofredo, though. He was a top 10 player at various times in the 70s, certainly the 77 world champion, won an LA Open singles championship, and a few other things. But your point is well taken. What would have happened? You know, would these guys have continued, et cetera? But again, Mark, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, you know, one of the big reasons that Scotty and Todd were able to do so well this year is because of Lofredo and his ability to adjust, Scotty's ability to be coached by Lofredo, mm-hmm. right, when playing that forward position, although at times Scotty was calling the switches. But and the way they play together, the way they can adjust really is what allowed them to get to that point. And then to lose in that final in a great open doubles competition. I didn't see the open singles final. I was on an airplane heading back home, unfortunately, had to leave and come back home. So I didn't see it and have not seen it. One other thing I wanted to say, too, about Brandon Munoz in that very final ball that we played, the flashback. You know, he tried two dinks, right? At the final ball, he tried two dinks. And I talked to him afterwards, and he was so excited, and he hadn't even played singles yet. He did those dinks because his father, Hakondi Munoz, who passed away 3 or 4 years ago, the father of Costa Rican foosball, that was his favorite shot. That's what he would do. And so he wanted to close it. Yeah, he wanted to close it. He wanted to win it by doing that. He wasn't able to, unfortunately. He went 0-for-2 on the dink. But it was really great to hear that from this great young player, a tribute to his father, Hakondi.
That's very cool. I love that. It's a great story.
Yeah, that the crowd was just, thank you, Mark. I'm sure you would have been so proud of the crowd because they were just so into the ball to ball, you know, one score to another, and especially in the open doubles, there was just so much cheering, and then of course at the end singing about them winning. That was just astounding.
I did, you know, it was wonderful to finally see the open singles final and to hear all that noise, and I loved it, man. It's missing from foosball. And I think if there's a next iteration of that, it's the noise, just like the soccer game, just being persistent the entire way through. And people are like, what difference does it make? Where, high level athletes zone all that stuff out. They will tell, you'll hear stories about Joe Montana or Michael Jordan. They turn the mechanism on, all that noise is nothing. And so, but anyway, it was lovely to see. I did hear it, and it was amazing.
It was, and I think a lot of it, as we talked about, was because it was kind of an international final, right? You had Costa Ricans who are always so supportive of their players, and the crowd was really, every other Costa Rican player was in that crowd, Carlos Cespedes, Martinez, et cetera. And it was just great to see that soccer mentality. It's something we see in Europe. But we have not seen that in the United States in a long time. If you do go back and go to InsideFoods.com and watch the 2001 Tornado World Championships, Trevor Park, Lewis Cartwright versus Colonial Lofredo, you'll see that in that match as well. But other than that, it hasn't really happened a whole lot in this country. Great to see it. And for me, as a commentator, when I'm in the middle of that, and of course, I've had a chance to work so many European events where the crowd is very involved. God, it's so fun to work in that environment for me as well. It really is.
You know what's funny, Jim? Yeah, as you know, I was fortunate I spent 10 days in France, and it really killed me professionally because I got home and I was buried. But for the few days I was there, they trucked in like 4,000 elementary school kids.
Wow.
And these kids lost their minds, and they didn't know foosball etiquette. So they were screaming their brains out during every possession. And of course, no one's going to tell a bunch of kids to shut up. So they just allow these kids to freak out. And it was super cool. I mean, it was really, really cool to see the players just play through it. Like, what are they going to do? They're not going to tell 4,000 elementary school kids that are there to see them, that are getting autographs. They're not going to tell them to be quiet. So you've probably seen that before, Jim. It's it was stunning for me. Really, it is.
And the point you're making, and I think it leads to a further conversation, is that the players, basically these players, need to be able to play through it, right? To play through the noise, embrace the noise, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, Johnny Horton, if you were cheering against Johnny, it would only elevate his game, right? And when you have someone supporting you, it only elevates your game. And at times you just have to just focus, you know, Major League Baseball players in these big moments, a big at bat, ninth inning in the playoffs or World Series, and the crowd is on their feet screaming. You just got to focus, do your thing, and embrace the environment. That's why you play the game, is to be able to get into situations like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real.
Well, it makes it fun for the players and for the spectators. I do have to raise one little bit of controversy that occurred in the open singles final. Spraydeman, of course, was battling ball for ball with Brandon. Brandon holding his own and really, you know, striking while the iron was hot. Now, at the very last point, there was a score from the five row of Brandon Munoz when he pulled the ball all the way to the wall, and it squibbed through and made its way into the goal and finished the match for Brandon. Now, for some reason, Tony Spraydeman stepped back and looked at the refs and said, "Hey, you know, there was this moment where everybody thought there was either a jar or something occurred that was illegal." And so there was a moment there for about 2 or 3 minutes. They were trying to look at the replay to figure out what actually happened. And as it turned out, it was a fair ball. But there was some pretty heated moments there where people were like, "Wait a second, he just won this. What are you trying to do?" But it mostly had to do with Tony saying, "Hey, you know what just happened there? That was I think that was illegal."
Yeah. So what I saw, Tom, I think, I've heard different things. Mm-hmm. I think the call might have been, did he properly put the ball in play? And he absolutely did put the ball in play.
Yes.
I think that now, if it was three walls, I don't think he touched the wall at all. Maybe once, but so I don't think he was three walls. So I think that at times when great champions lose a match that they're not expecting to lose, they may wonder about certain things, and I think that's what happened. I think Tony lost. I mean, how often do you see Tony lose any match, much less a championship, world championship, or tornado championship ball on a 5-bar slop?
Yeah.
You never. Like, Tony never. Is notorious for blocking all slop.
Yep.
And to lose like that was so anticlimactic. Congratulations, man. Hell, you know how many times I wish I slopped the ball in on 4-4? I can never get a break.
Everybody does, for sure. No,
never works
whoops,
for me.
Whoops, sorry. Whoops, sorry. How sweet it is. One of the great team names of the 70s.
Yeah.
Good. And I know I didn't see the match. Unfortunately, I've not been able to see the match, but it's always important. And you have officials at the table, right? At a match like this, you've got your two officials. I don't know who they were, but you've got them at the table. But as you said, Tom, you also have access to replay if you need it, right? And so it's all there. And the goal is, and they talk about this all the time in the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever, the goal is to get the call right, you know? And sometimes it's going to be a little anticlimactic, and it is in the other sports, but you want to review it. You want to make sure you want to get the call right. And, you know, as it all happened, it worked out, you know, Munoz doubles. And Mark, again, you equated it with Tommy Atkins, and that's probably the closest, you know, thing that's the closest comparison that we would have here. Although that year, Tommy could have tripled if he had to beat Steve and Gina Murray in the mixed doubles final. But still, that is kind of it. Similar players in the way they go about it, that high-speed style. But, you know, I don't think we've ever seen a player quite like Brandon Munoz. I've called him the most entertaining player in foosball. He is ridiculously good at singles. He is fearless, as you said, Mark. And I think from now on, you know, certainly based on that performance, we look at this young man from Costa Rica very differently, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been knocking
something
on the
that
door.
Happens. Sorry, go ahead, Tom.
No, he's been knocking on the door now for what, you know, 5 or 6 seasons, getting that close and just finally broke through.
There seems to be something that happens with self-awareness or consciousness that happens when people win. Because a lot of people get stuck behind the other side of that. A lot of people are taking second and third perpetually, and we won't even rattle off names, but there are a ton of those guys. The smaller percentage are the guys and gals that win. And once they win, they become self-aware, almost like an AI, I can win. And then all of a sudden, the realm of possibility and confidence get to another. Yeah, what's the name of it? Skynet? Okay, Skynet. It's like, but he's the Terminator now. Man, we're just going to go off on this. Anyway, he becomes a serious threat from this point forward to win all the time. It just like, you know, and it's amazing as well as you'd call, gosh, I'm just going to say it. Like you look at Kevin and Brandon and technical acumen, you might even put Kevin a little higher than Brandon in terms of, you know, complete technical precision and consistency. However, Brandon has a fire and a lack of fear in these key moments where he's only gotten better and better. He's never wilted. He's gotten flat out manhandled by Tony in open singles finals after destroying everybody up to Tony. But he's never fallen apart. Tony's just beat him. Right now, he's something different now.
And isn't it cool? Isn't it cool for Tony, who, you know, gives it on every ball? Isn't it great now for him to have a rival who also plays every ball hard, right? Yes. Isn't it great now for us to look forward moving into the future? Yes. To future matchups with these guys who both bring it. You know, we always enjoy this Spraderman versus Ryan Moore. The level of play is just off the charts great. But we don't always get Ryan Moore, unfortunately. We don't always get the A game, you know. we're always going to get it with Brandon Munoz, and that's what's exciting. These two incredible singles players, we get a chance over the next few years, and you know Tony is taking this as an affront to some degree and a challenge, and it's going to motivate him. He's going to come back the next time. But what a great thing for football fans to watch moving forward.
And Jim, you're right. That may be the absolute best thing to come out of this is Tony has been like Alexander, who's conquered everything. And without Ryan or Billy as a steady nemesis, you could even say Tony has been winning open singles championships doing it bored. Yeah. No offense, or maybe absolute disrespect to every other singles player that he's been crushing, but Tony can win these events without like breaking a sweat. And so thank goodness we have Brandon to give Tony someone to give reason to Tony a reason to practice.
Yeah, for sure. Probably we need Magic versus Bird. We need Leonard versus Hearns and Hagler and Duran. Right. We need those kind of matchups, and I think we have one here certainly. And foosball fans should be really excited about it because not only are these two guys great, not only do they bring it every ball, but man, they're both fun to watch.
Yeah, what entertainment. So Mark, first of all, it's great to have you back and your perspective here. Of course, we've got Thunderdome coming up October.
Yeah. Thank you. This has been I couldn't help but go ahead. Sorry, keep talking.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to know how are things going. I know they're closing out the registration on the 27th of September. Is that correct?
Yes. So I'm here for a drive-by, but I couldn't help but get caught up in the excitement of the Tornado Championships. I appreciate you, Tom, getting a minute here to talk about this stuff. But so Thunderdome, the second one, the first one was earlier this year. The next one is in Tampa. And I know you had you probably had Cadel and Tommy Brewer promoting Thunderdome a couple of weeks back. This is a very unique format, and we're still like testing it. But it's really, really there. I think at this point it's 100% there. Registration has been open since, I believe, September 2nd, I think, and it's closing on the 27th. There are well over 22, 23 teams now, I think. And no matter how many teams there are on the 27th, registration is closing. Oh. It's already like a guaranteed 14 or 15 grander. So for max 64 people, and they already have 48 people. So I don't want to make a commitment to how much it's guaranteed for, but it's already the biggest, you know, no pro event in the world, I think. With that amount of cash just for no pros, and it's coming up and the registration closes on the 27th. And that's what I was here to talk about. I think if you have any inkling or interest in playing in this, you got to get your name in the hat because it's closing on the 27th.
And you've got to come with a partner, correct?
Yes, you come. So here's the thing about this format. People who haven't played it and even people who do play it, I mean, they may or may not know it or understand it, but you come there with a partner because you need to sign up with when you bring with you. But you play with that partner, I think 20% of the entire time because the other events you're playing with, it's a monster draw your partner, monster Swiss draw, and a monster Swiss designated draw. So, and I think they're guaranteeing like 32 matches or something. So yes. You will play like 24 matches with different partners, something like that.
It's awesome.
I mean, it's real close to that. And maybe a little less because there's singles, which is like 5 matches, I think, or 6 matches. So maybe it's like 20 matches with. Anyway. Yeah. Am I still here?
Yep. Still gotcha.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're wondering, is it going to be like before? Are we going to see a talented amateur walk away with the prize? I mean, what are the likelihoods of something like that?
Yeah. Like in the span of like 8 months, Evan's gone from amateur to one of the top experts in the country. So, all right. I don't think I'm looking at the bracket and you guys have seen it up close and know it now. Evan is a spectacular talent. He's like a once in a long time super talent. I don't think that person's in the bracket this time. I think there's some highest placing beginner, amateur, and rookie bonuses. There's going to be a lot of money there, but I think the big overall prize is going to go to an expert and some people. I think a dangerous stud in this event is actually Zach Hofer, or I don't think I see pronounce his name, out of South Dakota. I think he's a big threat. Evan's going to be there, of course, and so you're going to have those two going at it. I think that's your, and you know, there's some local experts too. I think that's who the problems are going to be. It's going to be between Zach Hofer and Evan at this point.
Wow. Interesting. Well, it's you can never predict because of the fact that there's no Spredemans, there's no Brandon Munoz, there's no one like that in these events.
Let me just tell you, one dangerous dark horse at this tournament is Noelia Arcos.
Yes.
Noelia is playing in this event, and she's not to be trifled with. If she does well in a couple of the doubles events, people's knees start to shake and the adrenaline starts to rush. Now you're in a singles match and, you know, Noelia is all over you. So I'd put Noelia as a threat at this event too. And there's another gentleman named Michelle Massey. I think he's out of Virginia now. You know, do you know Michelle?
Michaela Massey. Yep.
Did I say it? Sure. Okay.
Italy. He's an Italian player. Very good player. Yeah.
So he's a big threat at this event. My dogs are freaking out. You guys, I love you. My kids are freaking out. My dogs are freaking out. Tom, I don't want to just jump out, but did you have any more questions for me, sir?
If there's any questions when it comes to putting together a team and heading down to Tampa, October 7th, should anybody just shoot you a message? Is that what we do?
Well, so there's an email, and you get all your information there. It's sffcthunderdome@gmail.com. So South Florida Foosball Club, the acronym SFFC. Thunderdome@gmail.com. That gets you right to Tommy Brewer and Luke Watson. And get all your information there. There's some stuff on, if you're on social media, on Facebook, Inside Foos, Inside Foos TV, you find some video assets there.
And it's an acronym. It's SFIFIC. Yes.
Why is that so funny? That's way funny.
Because an acronym, usually you can put it together in a. This one's tough. Sfikikik. So just contact them. That should be a great event. And we love this format. It was so much fun back in February down in South Florida. Just a lot of fun. Probably the most fun I've had at a tournament all year.
Yeah. And Mark, are you going to be there?
Right now I'm 90% to be
90%.
There.
Okay.
I'm 90% to be there. Tommy and Luke is probably hearing that for the first time. I'm 90% to be there. I got some work things going on, you guys. I get them very, very, encumbered right now by a lot of different things going on. And on top of that, in a couple of weeks or so, when I have things more formative, I'd love to get back on for a few minutes and talk about, I have some investors looking at foosball for a cash infusion, and a lot of the stuff that people see the tip of the iceberg when I start posting stuff about distraction versus disruption. They don't know the other 90% of it, but now's not the appropriate time, and I'm not really organized to discuss it. It'd be great at some point to talk about how to get cash infused to foosball by totally changing a lot of things that foosball does, and so that'll be next time I reach out. Maybe I'll get some more time with you, Tom and Jim.
Okay, yeah.
Sounds great. Great, Mark. Great to hear your voice. Great to spend a little time with you. We miss you, buddy. And, of course, you're welcome anytime here.
Thanks, fellas. Cheers, man. Have a good Sunday.
Later, Mark.
Yep.
So, There's just so much happening. It's hard to keep everything straight. We do have, of course, Michigan State coming up, which is happening on, September 30th in Michigan. And I'm actually going to be there.
Which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah,
Michael Stahl does such a great job with that event. Of course, great foosball man out of the state of Michigan, second generation player. So if you haven't made your plans yet to attend this great event up in Michigan, please do.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a really nice hotel this year, and that looks like a really good turnout so far. I know for me at least, flying in and out, it's a lot cheaper, cheaper than it was when I went to Lexington, which makes it much more attractive. Of course, if I could, I would certainly be booking a flight to Colorado as well, but. We'll just have to.
Yeah, that's going to be a great one. And let's touch base on that real quick. You know, November 10th through 13th at the Doubletree Hotel in Thornton, Colorado. Mm-hmm. Make your plans to be there. Generally, this event is 450 players or so. Great venue. Great event. Looking forward to it. Of course, the Colorado Hall of Fame ceremony as well. I don't know who's going in yet this year. But should be a lot of fun. And so put that one on your schedule as well. So some great events coming up here in the next couple of months, Tom.
By the way, I was watching the ceremony at Tornado Championships, the award ceremony there. Any surprises this year as far as those who received awards?
Oh, there always are. You know, some of those are voted on, and so you get some popularity type stuff. But no, not for the most part. I mean, the people that you would expect to win, the big awards certainly did. With Sully and Tony and people like that. Mm-hmm. As we kind of wrap up our talk about Tornado Championships, I want to make sure we also look at Midori Kimura and Sullivan Rue. Midori winning her fifth career world championship. I think at this stage, Midori is a future Hall of Famer. I mean, you win five world championships. She's doubled twice. She's won singles three different times. And again, this year, beating Cindy Head in the final. How about that?
Yeah, that was
and
amazing.
And then for Sullivan Rue and Hannah Smith to go back-to-back at the Tornado Championships, that's something that has not happened very many times.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened, I believe, Cindy Head did it several times with a couple of different partners. But that's quite an accomplishment for Sully and Hannah. And of course, Midori as well. And you know, that's what makes these big championship events, these major championships, so interesting, are the stories, are the fact that you know that these results are going to be etched into history forever. You know, people are going to look back 40 years from now and see what Midori and Sully and Brandon Munoz and Kevin Romero are doing. And of course, Tony and Ryan and Billy and everyone else as well. It's what makes my job a lot of fun, which makes your job a lot of fun, as we're able to look at these great accomplishments, recognize them, and kind of tell the stories.
It gives us so much more impetus when it comes to getting excited about this sport, because people are getting charged up within the sport. But of course, you and I have, and of course, Adam and Clay and everybody is, you know, really having a whole lot more fun. Because of all the great stories.
And that's what it's about. It's about having fun. And certainly for us, covering these stories, being a part of them many times and getting to be really in the moment involved with these matches, it's really exciting and fun for us.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the changes that are in the wind, so to speak. Now, of course, Thunderdome is an example of that. But we talked to David Kala. Recently, who's part of House of Tournaments and his modern foosball software. You know, heard some comments along the way on during the tournament in Kentucky, some people talking about the pros and cons of this. Jim, what do you think the status is of modern foosball and their software? What do you think is going to happen there?
I think they've solidified themselves as a viable option, a viable choice for tournament directors, and they continue. The one thing I like, and we talked about this when we had David on, is the fact that it evolves. It continues to evolve. He's going to go with the changes. What do people need? What do people want? What will make this software better? What will make the tournament experience better for the players and for the promoters and people running these events? And if you're open to it, if you're willing to do it, if you have the skills to do it, why wouldn't you do it? And that's kind of where we are with David Kala and company, and the fact that they are so open to again, improving the player experience, improving the experience for promoters, making it easy to run these events, making it easier to make sure you don't get forfeited out of a match, or also to be able to really be a part of the tournament, even if you're not there. And so certainly what they are doing, I think is important. And again, it's all about evolution. Competition breeds evolution, breeds change, breeds advancement. And I think that's what we're seeing there, certainly with modern foosball.
Yeah, it seems in a way there's a bit of acceptance of the fact that there's going to be more than one option now when it comes to tournament software. And I think that's a healthy thing.
It's very healthy, and it needs to be that way. And maybe not everybody's happy about it. Change is difficult for a lot of people, but it's what needs to happen moving forward. And, you know, we're seeing that on a lot of different levels, whether it's with young players, whether it's with changes in formats as we move maybe more towards the Swiss system here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that need to happen. You know, maybe an argument could be made over the last 10 or 15 years that things have been a bit stale. Maybe things have not moved forward as they should have or could have. And I think now with what's happening with David Kala and Modern Foosball, with the Thunderdome, with what Tommy Brewer and company are doing at South Florida, Steve Murray always open to making things better down in Texas, with what Colorado State is doing, what's happening up in the Pacific Northwest and in various pockets around the country, I think we are certainly moving more and more in that direction.
Yeah, no, we're certainly open to the change. I think it's high time, especially in, you know, once COVID came along and really kind of pushed things aside for a while. I think people had time to think about this and realize, okay, things were going well before COVID came along, but now all of a sudden we've got to make a change. And now that we've come through the other side, quote unquote, of the COVID pandemic, now we can make those changes finally.
Yep, for sure.
Well, we do have a special guest joining us from Michigan, who's going to be working with us with Michigan State. Michael Stahl is on. Michael, how you doing?
What's up, gentlemen? How are we doing?
Mike, how are you, buddy?
Another great Sunday night.
Doing great, man. Can't complain. We're about 12 days out from a regional Master Series Championships, the Michigan State Championships.
Yeah.
It's shaping up to be pretty well attended. We've sold out on the rooms. I've opened up another hotel at the Comfort Inn, right in the same parking lot.
Oh, that's great news.
It's a pretty good rate, $99 a night.
Yeah, that's excellent news.
No, so, that's great. And as a tournament promoter, that's, you know, because I know how it can be running these events. You know, we've all talked about how Steve Murray is leading into the Texas States. It's, you know, you're nervous. You're a little worried. You're always, because there's so much work involved with putting these things together and a little bit of risk as well. So when you find out that your hotel is sold out and that you have to go to another hotel, that's got to make you feel pretty good.
Yeah, last year we pulled 161 during COVID, and I think that we've been very transparent with the players and how we're doing this. And you know, I don't know. I think we're trying to shed light to the history of the game. You know, I'm a big historian. You know, I love 70s foosball. I love talking about the TS era, and so we're you know, the Super Singles poster that we just put out, you know, it's super vintage, and we're just trying to show respect to that era.
So Michael, give us an idea. How does Super Singles work, and how does one get in it?
Yeah. So the main event, we give away a T3 that's wrapped by, Josh Sarpy. He wraps foosball tables, and, it's going to have a Foos gadget. We're going to give away on that as well, but it's $50 a player. Anyone can join. You play by your singles rank, and it's one game race to your handicap. So Masters play to 9, Pros 8, and so forth down. Yeah, it's one game, double elimination. It's really exciting. I created that, well, I guess I kind of was inspired by the Warriors Super Doubles event back in 2013. It's such a spectation.
Which you did pretty well in that, as I recall.
Yeah, I think one game is really easy to follow for anyone, even people that don't play foosball. My goal is to get people engaged that would normally not be with foosball. And so that's really the format that I think it's easy. It's most digestible for people that aren't really into it too much.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I mean, going all the way back to the 70s, and of course that format has been tried throughout the years, whether it's doubles, super doubles, or super singles. But it's always really interesting, and you get unexpected results. You get great stories as these teams, whatever ranking they are, kind of builds momentum heading into that bracket and maybe pulls off an upset early on in that final bracket before eventually, you know, potentially winning that championship. But I've always felt it gives maybe the lower ranked players a chance to play at the highest level, you know, for a little bit, and oftentimes win, you know, in these situations. There's a great history of teams. 1979 super singles, or rather super doubles. Ben Rivera and Tom Klein, the expert team, ended up winning, and they won $20,000, you know, for their first place finish. Ben Rivera, a player out of Southern California, who ended up winning that event, a guy that I knew very, very well, and it was so much fun to see that. So I admire, and I love when you say, Mike, that you're a fan of the 70s. Of course, so much history there in the state of Michigan. Your father, of course, Michael Stahl Sr., a player for so long. So respecting the game, learning from what happened in the past, certainly a big part of it. And I'm excited to see how this goes for you.
Yeah, we're going to have team names like they did in the 70s for open doubles. So you'll register under your team name. Of course, it will show your opponents what the players are under that name is, of course. But yeah, we're going to be running, you know, I think a really good tournament. We're excited. We're going to be showing respect to the 70s. And yeah, we're super happy to be able to do this for a second year in a row. Dawson Stremme from Pennsylvania won super singles last year. You know, we're going to be giving away a vintage copy of a 77 Schlitz super singles poster from the TS days for first place for that event as well. I got Mark Matarese making me really beautiful acrylic trophies. You know, we're going all out. It's going to be for the players, by the players. So.
Does this
just
mean
super
that,
excited?
If I show up in my my gym shorts and knee length tube socks, that I'd fit right in?
I think you're going to be perfectly comfortable no matter what you look like. I mean, we're going to have guys that are going to be dressed as the Joker.
Well, we've seen that before. I saw that at the Worlds.
Yeah, we're going to have some characters, man. It's going to be a good time.
Well, it's got to be a little circus element there, right?
Yeah, bring your foosball trading cards, guys. We're going to have tables just set up for the people trading cards, too.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I bought a couple of packs at the Tornado Championships, and I actually waited a couple of days before I opened them when I got home, and got some really – I got a Bobby Diaz, which is in holographic, which is really cool.
Oh, that's sick, man. Yeah. I'll have to maybe – persuade you with a furry.
you might just do
so
Mike that.
No, I'm actually keeping that. That's my gem. Okay. That's my prized possession, man.
So Mike, the give us again the dates of the event, the hotel. Give us all the stuff that we need to know.
Yep. Hilton Garden Inn, September 30th through October 2nd. And you know, Michigan is beautiful this time of year. If you guys are on the fence, just make the trip out. You know, we've got an overflow hotel at the Comfort Inn. $99 a night for double queens. So we're trying to fill up even the last minute, you know, players. So, cool. You know, come check Michigan out.
And it all starts on Friday that day. And what time does the doors open?
I think 10 a.m. on Friday morning.
Nice. Cool.
Yep. We'll be playing and we'll be doing some things that people aren't doing right now. So come check us out.
Looking forward to it, Michael. I'll be taking my flight out, I'll be there Friday evening, in fact.
Yep, we're going to be trying to get you a ride from the airport, bud. Cool. So we'll be seeing you then.
Looking forward to it.
Awesome. And Foodstock Live, Foodstock Live Sunday night, Tom.
Yeah, Sunday night from the event. From Michigan State.
All right, Michael, great job. Keep up the good work, and I'm sure we'll see you down the line, bud.
All right, cheers, fellas.
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, so wow, lots of activity. Of course, we were going to get together with Clay and Adam, who are out in Portland this evening at the mashup, but it seems they got sidetracked.
Yeah, you know, that can happen. You know, certainly when there's things going on a Sunday night when you need to commentate or even in some cases play, that's going to happen. But good luck to those guys out there. And I know how those tournaments go. Pacific Northwest tournaments are a lot of fun. I know they're having a good time.
Right.
And so, you know, we'll check in with them next week about that event for sure.
And of course, their impressions of Tornado Championships, too, which I know they have a few. Especially from the last 2 days of play there. But I got to say, Jim, this was great. I'm glad we got a chance to just hang out and catch up.
Yeah, we kind of a nice visit from Mark Torres. He's always great, always good to hear his insights, his perspective on things, and Michael Stahl as well.
Yep.
And we'd again like to thank our Patreon supporters, both who are in attendance tonight and the others as well, as we move forward into what should be a pretty fun end of the season here in 2022.
Yeah, no question. We're finishing it in style, no doubt about it. And we're looking forward to another episode, this being, of course, the 126th episode of Foos Talk Live. Thank you so much for your listening in and support, and looking forward to many, many more. But in the meantime, we will catch you next week on Foos Talk.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Foos Talk Live proudly presents a weekly update of events near you with the Foos Talk Live Tournament Beat. Here's what's up. It's the 2022 $10,000 Michigan State Foosball Championship, sponsored by Foos Gadgets, September 30th through October 2nd at the Hilton Garden Inn, Lansing West, Lansing, Michigan. The South Florida Foosball Club and RK Foosball proudly present Thunderdome 2, October 7th through the 9th. Holiday Inn, St. Petersburg North, Olmerton Road, Clearwater, Florida. It's the 2022 16th Annual Louisiana State Foosball Championships, October 7th through the 9th at Buffalo Billiards, Bloomfield Street in Jefferson, Louisiana. Don't miss the 2022 Illinois State Championship 9th Annual Foosball Tournament, October 20th through 23rd, Poplar Creek Bowl, Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Two Gun Productions presents the Halloween Open, October 29th through the 30th at Magoo's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The IFP has announced two events for 2023, which includes the 2023 Kentucky State Tour Kickoff, Clarion Hotel in Lexington, Kentucky, February 1st through the 5th, and the 2023 Hall of Fame Classic at the Golden Nugget in Las Vegas, Nevada, April 12th through the 16th. Each week, we do our best to give you the most up-to-date listing of foosball tournaments near you. If you have an event you would like to add, send us all the details at info@foosballradio.com. Tune in every week for the Foos Talk Live Foosball Beat. This has been a Foosball Radio presentation. All rights reserved. Brought to you in part by InsideFoos.com, ProtectoFlex, RodLock, 518 Prince, the USTSO, and Foosball Clubs USA. Tune in again next week for another episode of Foos Talk Live. In the meantime,
we'll see you foosin'.